On this 27th day of July, 2006, we are reading from the Srimad Bhagavad Gita as it is, translation and commentary, by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. And we are now on, in chapter 2, the contents of the Gita summarized. And we are on text 8? 7? No, we did 7. Yeah, I think we covered the ground. We'll do 8. Text 8. 2:8.
Nahi papashyami pamapanudyad. Yachokam uchoshanam indriyanam. Avapyabhumavasapatnam ridham. Rajam suranam apichari patyam. Nahi papashyami mamapanudyad. Yachokam uchoshanam indriyanam. Avapyabhumavasapatnam ridham. Rajam suranam apichari patyam.
Translation, I can find no means to drive away this grief which is drying up my senses. I will not be able to dispel it even if I win a prosperous, unrivaled kingdom on earth with sovereignty like that of the demigods in heaven. Purport, although Arjuna was putting forward so many arguments based on knowledge of the principles of religion and moral codes, it appears that he was unable to solve his real problem without the help of the spiritual master, Lord Sri Krishna. He, Arjuna, could understand that his so-called knowledge was useless in driving away his problems, which were drying up his whole existence, and it was impossible for him to solve such perplexities without the help of a spiritual master like Lord Krishna. Academic knowledge, scholarship, high position, etc., are all useless in solving the problems of life. Help can be given only by a spiritual master like Krishna. Therefore, the conclusion is that a spiritual master who is 100% Krishna conscious is the bona fide spiritual master, for he can solve the problems of life. Lord Chaitanya said that one who is a master in the science of Krishna consciousness, regardless of his social position, is the real spiritual master. Kiba vipra kiba nyasi shudra kene noi jay krishna tattva veta se guru hoy. It does not matter whether a person is a vipra, learned scholar in Vedic wisdom, or is born in a lower family, or is in the renounced order of life. If he is a master in the science of Krishna, he is the perfect and bona fide spiritual master. Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya 8, 128. So, without being a master in the science of Krishna consciousness, no one is a bona fide spiritual master. It is also said in the Vedic literature, Shat karma nipano vipro mantra tantra visharadaha avaishnavo guru nasyad vaishnava shopacho guruhu. A scholarly Brahman, expert in all subjects of Vedic knowledge, is unfit to become a spiritual master without being a Vaishnava, or expert in the science of Krishna consciousness. But a person born in a family of a lower caste can become a spiritual master if he is a Vaishnava, or Krishna conscious. This is from the Padma Puran. The problems of material existence, birth, old age, disease, and death, cannot be counteracted by accumulation of wealth and economic development. In many parts of the world, there are states which are replete with all facilities of life, which are full of wealth and economically developed. Yet the problems of material existence are still present. They are seeking peace in different ways, but they can achieve real happiness only if they consult Krishna, or the Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, which constitute the science of Krishna, through the bona fide representative of Krishna, the man in Krishna consciousness. If economic development and material comforts could drive away one's lamentations for family, social, national, or international inebrieties, then Arjuna would not have said that even an unrivaled kingdom on earth or supremacy like that of the demigods in heaven, like that of the demigods in the heavenly planets, would be unable to drive away his lamentations. He sought, therefore, refuge in Krishna consciousness, and that is the right path for peace and harmony. Economic development or supremacy over the world can be finished at any moment by the cataclysms of material nature. Even elevation into a higher planetary situation, as men are now seeking on the moon planet, can also be finished at one stroke. The Bhagavad Gita confirms this. Chine punye martyalokam vishanti. When results of pious activities are finished, one falls down again from the peak of happiness to the lowest status of life. Many politicians of the world have fallen down in that way. Such downfalls only constitute more causes for lamentation. Therefore, if we want to curb lamentation for good, then we have to take shelter of Krishna, as Arjuna is seeking to do. So Arjuna asked Krishna to solve his problem definitely, and that is the way of Krishna consciousness. Om Jnanatamarandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmidatam Mena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance. My spiritual master Srila Prabhupada opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisances unto him. So here Arjuna is giving his final word to Krishna before Krishna begins his instructions. And basically he's saying that I don't want the kingdom. It won't help me. The grief which I am experiencing is like purva. It's like purva raga. You know, there's this phenomenon called purva raga, which means before you even meet the beloved, you fall in love. This happens with Radharani, with Rukmini, all of Krishna's lovers. They generally fall in love ahead of time just by hearing about him. They're called purva raga. So here, even though Arjuna has not killed anyone yet, he hasn't certainly harmed a head on Dronacharya's or Bhishma's heads, he's still in lamenting. He's lamenting because he's seeing that. He's foreseeing that that's what will happen. And so that grief, which is drying up his senses, certainly winning the kingdom won't help it, because that'll involve killing his relatives, killing his revered seniors. And so another reason the grief is there is because he's torn. He's torn between duty and his emotions, basically. That's the dichotomy here. And so he's rejecting the whole idea of the battle based on the idea of winning the kingdom. That will be the external result. Well, that's the external goal that they're looking for. The real goal, however, is the reinstitution of Dharma by the will of Krishna. And that is the higher duty that Arjuna has, which he will eventually surrender to, despite the fact that he will have to kill his relatives. But now, at the beginning here, he's in this first chapter, in this first part of second chapter, he's laid out his whole dilemma. And that's why Prabhupada keeps using the word perplexity. So let's go through the purport. In the last few verses, of course, the previous verse talked about Arjuna surrendered to Krishna. But even though he surrendered to him, now again he's going back to his old argument. So he's going to need more than just a surrender. He needs to have instruction too, and that will come. That's what he prayed for. So this is an illustration. We have to surrender, inquire, and also serve. Those are the tripartite formula for relationship with the guru. So the key element here is that he can't figure it out on his own. He says, Dharma Samudacheta, in the previous verse, that phrase, Dharma Samudacheta, my consciousness is bewildered as to what is right, what is the right thing to do. So please tell me for certain. So therefore, the first element here that Prabhupada talks about, as he did in this previous purport, is who can we inquire from? This is the critical question. How can we find true and certain instruction in the adventure of life, so that we can navigate these dangerous waters, or if you will, this impassable forest, however you want to look at it, successfully. If we try on our own, we're blinded. We can't. Our minds are imperfect. Our senses are imperfect. Our intelligence is imperfect, and we will surely go in the wrong way. So the necessity of the spiritual master is there. Who is the spiritual master? Ye Krishna Tattva Veta, one who knows the science of Krishna. And Prabhupada uses this point, he's a master in the science of Krishna consciousness. So it's not just anybody or even any devotee, but it's someone who's truly advanced and who can guide us, surely, who's a repository, this idea of the Acharya. He's a repository of Vedic knowledge. He lives according to the injunctions of the Vedic knowledge, books like Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita, and he teaches. So it's not just he knows and practices, but he has the compassion, realized compassion, in order to teach it. That's the Acharya, and that's the one we have to approach. So Krishna, he certainly meets these criteria. He is the very source of the Vedas. He certainly lives by them, and he makes every effort to help the conditioned souls. So he's the perfect spiritual master. In fact, he's known as the Adi Guru. All genuine gurus must be representatives of Krishna. Prabhupada makes this point without being... So, in conclusion, without being a master in the science of Krishna consciousness, no one is a bona fide spiritual master, which is quite an important statement because there's so many who pose themselves as teachers in spiritual matters, new age, this and that. There's thousands and millions even who are posing themselves as sources of knowledge who can help us to improve our lives and to reach self-actualization or what is self-realization, whatever they want to call it. But if they're not masters in the science of Krishna consciousness, which means devotees of Krishna, they're not real spiritual masters. They're misguiders. And this is why in the Srimad Bhagavatam, it is said, Prayanalpayashak sabya kalavasman yugejana manda sumanda matayo manda bhagya yupadruta, that in this age of Kali, there are so many impediments to those who are interested in self-realization. And some of them are short longevity. We don't live that long. Time is of the essence. We're lazy in the matter of self-realization. We're so bewildered and so much in the mode of ignorance. The mode of ignorance produces laziness, procrastination, you know. And then even if we aren't so lazy, we'll be misguided. We'll go to one of these misguiders, these, you know, fakers, if it will, you know, those who pretend to be leaders. And our genuine, you know, budding little interest in self-realization will go off in some direction and we'll be misguided. We won't get Krishna. And therefore, we're unfortunate. There's so many disqualifications in this age. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has come in this age and made us all fortunate by spreading the Sankirtan movement and creating many genuine representatives of the real Dharma of the age, mainly Sankirtan and Krishna consciousness, by the efforts of his great representative, Srila Prabhupada himself. So then again, he's defining the guru, Shat Karma Nipuno Vipro. It's not just that you're a Brahmin, born in a Brahmin family, or even that you are expert in the six activities of a Brahmin, which is Yajan Yajan, Patan Patan, and Dana Pratigraha. Means performing sacrifice. You know, you'll see Chaitanya Bhagavan or Dharma Setu. You know, not that they're not, but one of the things of a real Brahmin is that they know how to perform the sacrifice, the mantras, the chant for so many affairs. So, and also teaches that to others. Yajan, Yajan. And studies the Shastra and teaches. And accepts charity and also gives charity. Gives out. Generally, the Brahmins are not supposed to become wealthy. They get a lot of charity, but they give it all away. So these are the six activities of the Vipra, and he may be expert in those, but if he's not, a mantra tantra, also expert in chanting mantras and performing all kinds of tantras activity. But a Vaishnava, Guru Nasyat, he cannot become a real spiritual master. But Vaishnava, Shrapacho Guru. Who are the Shrapachas? Bob, isn't it? Dog cookers, right. And of course, after cooking, they eat them. So they're called dog eaters. The Shrapacha, this is a common epithet, if you will, for the lowest in society. Even, of course, I would say in this society, we're even lower. A cow eaters are even worse. But in any case, it's, you know. But if a Shrapacha, someone is born in a family of dog eaters, but is a Vaishnava, means that they're not eating dogs now. But he has the qualities of a Vaishnava, then he can become a guru. So the point is, it doesn't have anything to do with birth. Although birth in a devotee family is auspicious, but it doesn't assure you. You still have to develop the qualities and activities of the Vaishnava. So, problems of material existence. You know, if you have one problem, But you try to solve another problem, or you do something superficial, then you're wasting your time. It's the old blowing on the boil type thing, you know. You have a serious boil, and so you blow on it, and it slightly relieves the pain for a little bit. And you know, this is your treatment. This is how you're dealing with the problem. But you may have some serious blood disease or something, you know. If you don't get to the root of the problem, then you're just postponing the day of reckoning, right? And your small problem can go into a big problem. So we have to really understand what are the true problems of life. How many times have we heard it? Four things. Otter, you know these by now? Four are like things that the worst problems we have. Birth? Wait. Four things. Birth? You can think of them in this order. The order they come in? Birth, old age, disease, and death. That's the cycle, right? Birth, old age, and you can think of, isn't it? Birth, old age, disease.
You don't get
you get disease early. Generally, if you birth, you get older, and you get sick, and then you die. Okay, general order. Birth and death can come in the same instant, practically. You're born, you know, you can. But that's the general order. So it's a cycle: birth, old age, disease, and death. Everybody has to solve those, has to face those. But generally, we put them out of our minds. You know, we're trying to deal with disease, but we're not trying to deal with disease with a capital D. We're trying to deal with each disease as it comes along. You know what I'm saying? So, okay, we got a big problem with avian flu. All right, we'll throw billions of dollars at that. We'll worry about it, you know. But then if avian flu doesn't get you, then, you know, AIDS will come along or heart disease or whatever it is. In other words, disease as an entity is inherent with the material body. Something's going to get you. You have two choices. You can die of old age with some disease, you know, that comes with it, or you can die prematurely, some accident or somebody kills you or something like that. So it's like, you know, the electrocution or the injection. Is that's a good choice? You know, we don't want to be executed at all. We want to stop death. We want to stop old age and disease. But because this is, you know, we live in a culture that is so body conscious, and you know, simply lives between these two bookends: the mystery of anything before death and the oblivion after. Before birth and the oblivion after death, that we think this is all there is. These lousy little 70 years, 80 years, 90 years, that's it. You know, this is actually the myth that this culture runs on. So there's no point in worrying about birth and death. They'll happen automatically. Disease, we'll spend trillions on the so-called health care system. You know, we'll take care of disease in that way. Do the best we can. You know, you have to face it. So therefore, try to enjoy as much as you can, as quick as you can. Right? If this is all there is, isn't it? Yeah. I mean, hedonism makes perfect sense. If there's no life after death. If we're the body. If you're the body, then hedonism makes perfect sense. But because we're not the body, and we are the soul, and there is life after death, and there's such a thing as sin and suffering and hell and horrible karma and all these things, therefore, we have to take a broader view. And that's what the Mahatmas mean. One of the meanings of the word Mahatma is broad-minded. Meaning, let's take a broader view. You know, let's break out of this. First lesson, in a few verses we'll hear. Break out of this idea that we began at birth and we'll end at death. We have to think of our long-term benefit as souls, as eternal souls. That's the first lesson. So, those are the problems of existence. And no matter how much wealth and prestige and power we accumulate, we're not going to solve those problems by that means. In fact, we'll deepen them, because the more that you accumulate on those realms, the more attached you become to this world, the more involved you are with this physical body and its extensions. Isn't it? That's why, generally, for Vaishnavas, poverty is an opulence, as weird as it sounds. To have nothing is really an opulence, because Krishna is a Akinchana Gotra. Janmaishraya Shuta Shiva Edamana Madakpurman Naiva Harta Bhadhatam Vayatrama Kinchana Gochra. Prayers of Queen Kunti. That those who are,
Desireless?
Akinchana Gochra, yes. You are the property of the propertyless. That's her conclusion. But the first part of the verse says, for those who are too much intoxicated, and it's a very nice word, mudda. Mudda is like intoxication or maddened, you know, this equivalent. With what? Janma, Aishwarya, Shuta, and Shribhi. So Janma is good birth. So I don't know about you, any of you, but that wasn't a consideration for me, you know, birth, you know. But I mean, if you're born into a famous family, you know, automatically you'll be a celebrity. Money, for the famous, money comes very easily, especially in a culture of celebrity like we have here. So Janma Aishwarya. Aishwarya is wealth. And let's never forget, with wealth comes controlling power. There's a relation between the word Ishwara and Aishwarya. They're the same. One is the person who has control, and the other is the controlling power, which is what wealth is all about. When you have wealth, you can control. You can move people around. You can move things around. So Janma Aishwarya, and then Shruti, another opulence, is knowledge, learning. And then the last one is Shribi, physical beauty. Now think about it. Aren't these things exalted in the present-day society? Wealth and beauty is practically the whole culture of celebrity, whether it's movie stars or models or whatever you want to call them. It's all based on wealth and beauty. You know, but how long does beauty last? And what is it really? You know, we have to have a jaundiced view of what these things really are. You know, what is that? Yasyatma buddhi kunapetri dhatuke saiva gokara. It is the mentality of the cows or the asses. And let's think of the asses, since the cows are an exalted animal. To think that this bag, this body, which is nothing but a bag, I mean, let's face it, it's a bag. It's a bag which has bones in it to keep it from just imagine with no bones, just lower, you know, just and just kind of, you know, just roll along on the floor, you know, a bag of unpleasant substances, you know, liquids and gases. So we have this bone structure. It's like a little tree, you know. So that's what it is. Krishna says, Tridhatuke, these are the words of Krishna. Mucus, bile, and air. This is Ayurveda. You know, when these are in balance, then you have good health, so to speak. But none, you know, mucus, bile, and air, that's not a very attractive thing. So where does the attraction come from? You know, when you see, when there's a Miss America or Miss Universe, whatever they have, do they ever say, oh, what a beautiful bag you have full of bile and air. You win. Your bag is better for, no. Because that's the reality. So they want the illusion, right? The illusion is, you know, that somehow this is, what is it really? Let's think about it. It's really the beauty of the soul, which is reflecting the beauty of Krishna and Radha, if you will, reflected through this lousy medium of the physical body. That's all the beauty there is. But because the body is material and everything is very delicate, the balance, you know, it gets a little old, gets a little fat, gets a little sick, whatever it may be, too much sun, no more attraction, and you're peeling, okay, I have to stay indoors for a while, and that's so, you know what I mean? Everything is such a rare balance, and for such a short time, 10 years, 20 years, maybe at most, you know, then too old. You know, it's definitely just an illusion. It's no more substantial than a dream. And yet, this beauty, just think how much money people spend to try to be beautiful or stay beautiful. Billions and billions and billions of dollars. Bodily conscious of life. So it's an intoxicant. If you have it, if you're born with it, then it's harder to call on Krishna with deep feeling. This is what Kunti says. For those who are too much and progressively intoxicated with these things, good birth, good family, you know, aristocracy, wealth, oh yeah, you know, and beauty and knowledge, then how can you call helplessly to Krishna? You're on top of the world, right? So therefore, far from solving our problems, which is basically the attachment to this world and our forgetfulness of Krishna, the wealth and power and these things that one can develop through material activities are impediments. And so in devotional service, we don't take a vow of poverty, so to speak, but we understand that we should live as simply as possible. What is that? Kamasyanindriyapriti jivala labhajivita yavata jivasatvajigyasa nato yascheya karmabhi. Very instructive. We made a book out of these verses called Dharma, The Way of Transcendence. It's at chapter 2, first canto. So one of the verses near the beginning is kamasya nindriya priti, that life's desires should not be aimed at sense gratification. You can't give up desire. Desire you have to have. But you have to direct it in such a way that it's not directed at sense gratification. What should it be directed at? He explains in his verse. Labo jivete yavata. One should acquire just what he needs to live, simply. Don't exaggerate the material necessities of life, so-called necessities. Labo jivete yavata. As much as needed to live. Then what should we live for? If I'm not living for money and pleasure and all these things, jivasya tattva jigyasa. One should live for inquiry into the absolute truth. It's the same as the first sutra, Vedanta Sutra. Narto yasche hi karma bi. Nothing else should be the goal of one's works, of one's activities. Very instructive verse. Brahma has a beautiful purport in here. So renunciation is really the one of the underpinnings. It's incontrovertible and it's essential. Renunciation meaning dispassion and detachment from the material things and living simply. That is an underpinning of any progress in bhakti yoga. Okay, let's see. So, and the point is made very clearly. Look at this society. So much economic development. There's never been a society as wealthy as this, even the ancient Egyptians or whatever you want to look at, with all their wealth. But America is full of people taking pills, depression, to get to sleep, to wake up, self-medicating with liquor and all these things because life is just so difficult. They have so much money is there, but it's not enough. So they spend more than they have and they go into debt. Billions and billions of dollars of personal debt, national debt. Actually, the whole economy is teetering on an edge. Trillions of dollars of debt. That means that no matter how much money you have, no matter how much you spend, it's never enough. There's always something more to want materially. And factually, the desires, the unfulfilled desires of the American people are the engine for the entire world economy. If America suddenly became all Krishna conscious and they lived simply, that would be a world depression. So we better stop preaching. That's very dangerous. Prabhupada said, if they knew what I was doing, they would arrest me. Because he's actually undercutting the entire basis of the whole world economy, which is this, unfulfilled maw of material desire. Around Christmas time, it gets to like a mad, frenzy. just visualize the woman with 2-3 kids walking through the Toys R Us, and the kids are going nuts, the latest toys, each $100, $200, It's an infantile society. Infants are never, it's instant gratification. If the breast is there and they're sucking, they're happy, And then there's a little rash and they're screaming, yelling, to fix it, It's immediately instant. That's what the society has come down to, instant gratification. It's infantile and very dangerous. But it leads to great lamentation and illusion and depression and anxiety, which we see all around us and we may have ourselves. But Krishna will instruct Arjun in how to solve that lamentation and the four problems of life, birth, death, old age, and disease, right here in the pages of Bhagavad Gita. Any questions or comments on this verse? Yes, Ruchirangara.
I noticed that although Swatha explains that the problems with beauty, even though admittedly beauty is beautiful, that if one may preserve beauty into old age, but another problem with beauty I notice is along the way when you have beauty, as you're living day to day, what goes on with it,
That's dangerous.
Yes.
Honestly speaking, when I was a kid, I had the idea that I was, I'd look in the mirror, I was like 10, 11 years old, and so, pretty good. Then I remember I'd have a hair would come out in my comb, and I would go, oh my God, I'm getting bald, I would actually be afraid I was losing my hair, and I was 11, 12 years old. I was obsessed. And then when I got glasses, it was like the end of the world. I said, oh my God, I'm not going to be perfect. It was really a serious thing, I didn't want to wear them, so most of my high school, I couldn't even see where I was going, and walk around. Maybe some of you had that same thing happen. But, look around you. That's what's people, going on, especially the poor girls. There's an impossible ideal of beauty, skinny to the point of starvation. And who can actually meet that? And these poor girls, that's all they have is the ideal. And they starve themselves, anorexia, anxiety, the boys leave, come, they go, It's a disastrous culture based on this ideal of physical beauty.
And not only that, but in social relations, someone who might get a lot of attention while another person is ignored, and all this dynamics going.
Yeah, yeah, it's really a nightmare. Anyone else? Yes, Prabhu.
When you were talking about the great souls, God-minded, that's probably the translation to Udaradi, yeah?
Udaradi? It might be, yeah, but I've seen it also in reference to Mahatma. A similar idea, yeah, Mahatma, the broader view. And, as we heard in the previous purport, there's so many verses like this, but here's one that specifically quotes from the Upanishads. Yava etad akshadam garg avidit vasmal lokat praiti sakripana. This idea of the kripana, someone who gets a human form of life but wastes it as a miser without inquiring or understanding aksharam, which here stands for the supreme Brahman, So that's the whole argument here is, Arjuna has called himself a kripana, karpa nidosho bahata svabhava. So we want to get that broader view. We have to understand our real situation in this material world, how fortunate we are to have a human form of life. And not just a human form of life, but the human form of life in which at least we're coming to that point of asking the right questions and going to the right source of answers. We're a very fortunate few. Forget about the lottery, We should be so thankful that we have that we're human beings and that we've come in touch with this movement which can answer the ultimate questions. Millions and billions of births we spent, fighting against this material energy and losing every time. Losing every time. The hard struggle for existence.
So we're so fortunate to learn Krishna consciousness that we can deal with all these things.
Yes, and now here we are on another Rath Yatra. I remember I was there for the first one in 77. Now this is 2006. It's almost 30 years. Prabhupada's mercy. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.